Welcome to episode 71 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. How to Make a Mind, Part 3. Start with life, put it in the right environment, and give it between 3.5 and 4 billion years of evolution. In How to Make a Mind, Part 1, episode 35, we started with our universe, and gave it between 13.7 and 13.82 billion years. We covered some cosmology, the Big Bang Theory, and some of the evidence that makes us believe that something like the Big Bang did occur. Although, there's at least one theory, called loop quantum gravity, that suggests that there may not actually have been a Big Bang. But we'll talk about that much, much later. In How to Make a Mind, Part 2, Episode 59, we started with the Earth and gave it about 4.54 billion years. We talked about how the solar system formed, and the rare Earth hypothesis would suggest that perhaps you need a planet very, very much like the Earth in order to have complex life develop. Some of the things we covered support that hypothesis, some of them refute it somewhat. But we talked of the formation of our solar system and things like the large moon that the Earth has and various other factors that may have impacted the development of life in general and then complex multicellular life. In episode 67, we talked about the origins of life and came to no firm conclusions. I think part of the problem when you're looking for the origins of life is that it's similar to trying to find the source of a river like the Amazon. You can go upstream as far as you want, and eventually you'll find yourself in sort of a murky, swampy area that dries out during part of the year, where you end up with a lot of little pools and streams. And you put your little plaque on any one of them and say, this is the source, only to find it covered in 3 or 4 feet of water, along with 50 square miles or so. And then when the water recedes, that particular stream might not even be there anymore. I think it's similar when you talk about the beginning of life. The research originally focused on questions like where did the building blocks come from, such as amino acids and simple sugars or carbohydrates. It was a mystery because life makes those molecules. And if life makes those molecules and needs those molecules for life, where did they come from at first? Turns out that amino acids and simple sugars can be made all over the place. Protostars can bathe the gas and dust around them and the various ices before they even form into planets and start making amino acids and simple sugars. That process continues when the star reaches its main sequence in places like asteroids and comets. Various sources of energy on a planet's surface, such as volcanic or lightning strikes, or even asteroid impacts, can also cause the development of amino acids and simple sugars. How those manage to assemble into self-replicating molecules is a little less clear. And then how those self-replicating molecules ended up as cells is even less clear. Did it start at hydrothermal vents, where the molecules would sit inside porous rock, letting those little openings act like cells until they learned to build cellular membranes? Or did the cellular membranes start first and later attach various self-replicating molecules? Did amino acids come together and form into proteins? And then those proteins turned out to catalyze the formation of RNA and DNA? Or did we start with DNA and RNA and they catalyzed the formation of proteins? Did it happen in mineral ponds on the land, in the deep sea, or perhaps even deep within the Earth's crust? Any of those processes could have taken place, perhaps all of them. Part of the problem is this notion that's been floating around that all of life started from one cell, the common ancestor. Even today, various single-celled life forms trade DNA back and forth. It's not uncommon for bacteria to eat another single-celled life form and incorporate some of its genetic information into itself. The idea that we all came from one cell seems unlikely to me. It seems more likely that several different types of cells formed independently and then traded genetic information until we got sort of a genetic average, giving the illusion of a single origin. We went from prokaryotes to eukaryotes. Prokaryotes keep all of their machinery within one large compartment held within the cell wall. Eukaryotes have various subcompartments held within their own membranes, like little tiny cells inside of the main cell. In the case of the nucleus, which is bound by its own membrane, there is extra machinery in place to compact much more genetic information in the same amount of space, and it allows for much finer control over which parts of the DNA are expressed or used to create substances at any time. This allows different cells with the same genetic complement to produce many, many different substances, mostly different proteins, and to take on different shapes and perform different tasks, which seems to be a prerequisite for the development of multicellular life. In the fossil record, the earliest irrefutable evidence of multicellular life takes place about 600 million years ago. There's a step there. We have to go from cells working independently to cells working in various colonial organisms to cells that specialize, do particular tasks for one large group of cells that is one creature. And how we got from single cell to multi-celled animals is a little clearer than most of the rest of the steps we've talked about. In fact, it's even been done in the laboratory. It took about 2 months. But we'll talk about that next time. I'll see you then.